The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
We are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. Our next segment is being powered by our good friends at Mercer Well Service. And it is time to check in with Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. Of course, he and the family, they have been on vacation in Hawaii. He's rested. He's ready to go. We've got so many topics to hit on. How are you, Jason?
Good. I'm in a little bit of vacation withdrawal, but... You know how it is. I think the most difficult part of coming home from vacation is having to quote unquote break your kids, the bad habits that you let them get away with when you're on vacation, just because you don't want to make a scene at the hotel,
or on the plane.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't stop with them. That was the most difficult part of the vacation, probably, was the flight. We originally were only going to go for a week, but when we got there, I said to my wife, I said, that flight with those kids is way too difficult for just a week. So it's your lucky day. We're going to stay an extra week. So we all had a good time.
Oh, that sounds great. Hey, Jason Peter is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And boy, this will shock you back into reality because we've got so many things to talk about that have been going on, unfortunately, in the NFL. But what is going on in Lincoln, Nebraska? Alphonso Dennard, the cornerback, he's just coming off his rookie season in the NFL, and he gets a DUI. Can you fill us in on the details? And what is the reaction from a lot of the Cornhusker fans up there?
Disappointed, obviously. I think for the New England Patriots, it couldn't have come at a worse time. I mean, with everything they're dealing with Aaron Hernandez case. But Alphonso, I mean, this was his story coming out of college, was that he played opposite Prince Amukamara for a couple of years. And Prince Amukamara was a first-round draft pick to the New York Giants, and the whole time Prince was here having success, everybody was pretty much saying, Prince is good, but the kid on the other side, Alphonso Dennard, he's even better. And whether that was true or not, you know, I think it still remains to be seen. Time will dictate all that, but they were both very good players. And Alphonso, it was just maybe a week prior to the draft a year ago where he was downtown in Lincoln at a bar, alcohol obviously involved, and he ends up getting into a fight with an undercover cop and takes a guy who probably would have been maybe a late first round pick, definitely a second round pick, and drops him to the seventh round. And Bill Belichick and his staff decided that he was worth the risk, and he ended up I think starting a few games for New England. Certainly they had issues in the secondary, but kind of opened the door for a young guy like that to step in. But no matter the case, he still ended up contributing to that team, and I think they liked him. And for a seventh rounder, teams are always looking for steals like that. When you don't have to pay a guy, the millions of dollars, and you're getting a starter type talent out there, that's every pro personnel guy's dream come true. And I don't know what happened this past time, but it's disappointing, not only because he was on probation, and I think he had kind of a suspended sentence. Maybe he was due to do like 30 days or something in jail, but he should have known better, I think, with the microscope, not just on him as a player, especially in Lincoln, Nebraska. I mean, you can't hide. you know, you can't hide whether you're an active player. You can't hide if you're a former player. And he's a guy who's kind of in the limelight right now. And then on top of it, though, you're wearing the New England Patriots colors. And you know everything that's going on right now up there. And you saw how quickly they dealt with the Aaron Hernandez situation. They've kind of laid out this standard that says, you know, we're not going to deal with it. And obviously comparing a DUI conviction or arrest to a potentially double homicide and you know, a murder conviction, obviously it is a little bit different, but still, you know that the microscope's got to be under you, and you just got to have better judgment than that.
Well, you know, the Patriots owner, Robert Kraft, I mean, he just was talking about this whole thing with Aaron Hernandez that, you know, he's really felt like he himself, the whole organization, that they were duped. And I would just assume, even with Alfonso Dehner this coming out, even with the DUI, they're going to start evaluating and looking at this talent, the talent that they're bringing on board, a whole lot closer.
Yeah, and, you know, this was kind of, I don't know if it's things have changed since Myra Kraft had passed, but you know, it touches my family personally with the New England Patriots, because back when my brother was coming out in the draft in 1990, would have been the 96 draft, New England had drafted him. And he was a similar case as to Alfonso, where maybe a late first round, you know, most likely a second round pick, and he slipped to the fifth round, where Bill Parcells and New England drafted him. And it was 2 days after the draft that he got a call from Coach Parcells, and he said, look, this isn't on me. He goes, I want you more than anything. He goes, you know, if I could have taken you in the first round, I would have taken you. Because he kind of, my brother, fit Bill Parcells' personality and the type of player that he was looking for. But he said, this was out of my hands, and they cut him. And, you know, my brother had a few issues in college. All of them, you know, were alcohol-related. Some, you know, were just accusations that were never proven. And but, you know, kind of how public perception is. Sometimes you're guilty as soon as it hits the newsstand, and that's just the way that people look at, I think, some of these people, high profile type people. And the reason for it was that they didn't know about any of the stuff that Christian had gotten into trouble for when he was in college, which was a complete and utter lie, because Christian was prepped on everything prior to the draft. You know, he had a kind of a whole team that was working with him, and the best way to kind of approach everything with trying to go into the NFL. And it was pretty much that honesty was just going to be the best policy. And he went in there and he told, you know, 32 teams every single thing that went on during his collegiate career. And so for them to come back and say that they didn't know about it, well, then your entire pro personnel team should have been fired, because, you know, they're just lying to ultimately, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Kraft, saying that they didn't know. But, you know, it was kind of Myra, supposedly. She was the one who kind of, you know, had went and said, I don't want this guy on our team. And sometimes, you know, a happy wife is a happy home, I guess,
right,
when you're Robert Kraft. But, you know, then soon after that, and the funny thing is, you know, Christian goes on and doesn't have, you know, another incident in 7 years of pro football. And now, you know, he's married, beautiful kids, great life. But soon after that, it just seemed, you know, there was Randy Moss who was brought in. And then you're seeing over, and I'm sure there have been others, but, you know, now you have a guy like Alfonso who had gotten in trouble, you know, before the draft, and Aaron Hernandez, who certainly had questions coming out of the University of Florida. So I don't know if it's now that Mrs. Kraft isn't there anymore, maybe they're more willing to bring guys like that in, but obviously for us, you know, my family, it kind of looks as though it's a, you know, a double standard. What is it? You know, it matters, I guess, how much upside the guy has, whether or not you're going to bring him in. I don't know exactly, you know, without having spoken to Robert Kraft and getting it straight out of his mouth, but it just seems like, you know, they try to put this image out there that they don't tolerate that sort of character. But all you can look at is the recent history, and they have shown year after year that they do bring in guys who have questionable character. And if they think the value is there, they'll do it. So, you know, it's just it's an unfortunate situation, obviously, for everybody. But you just hope that guys, you know, they look at their peers and they look at what they're going through and the stuff that they're not getting away with, because you just can't get away with anything anymore. You really have to be on the straight and narrow, and that's not just NFL players now. I think there's just, you know, everybody has a camera phone. Everybody has the capability of recording you in your worst moment. And that one worst moment can be the end of your career, just like that.
Well, you know, Jason, you're talking about so many of the players, but we're seeing this even in the front office with what the Denver Broncos, I mean, a key player personnel, with what Tom Hekert, you know, with a DUI.
Yeah, I know. And it wasn't just Hekert there. It was the former Colorado linebacker Matt Russell, who was a director of pro personnel. They were both high up in that organization, scouting department. But yeah, two. You know, I think Matt Russell was just recently, and Tom Hekert was back, I think, like June 11th, somewhere around that date. But you know, that's just, I just think that's the world that we live in now. You know, you could go back to the days of, you know, the Babe Ruths and the Ty Cobbs and guys like that, where, you know, drinking and driving was probably just the norm. You know, that's just what those guys did. And if they got pulled over in their worst moment, chances are there was police officers that were probably saying, hey, follow me home, or, you know, no problem. Could you sign this for me? That's not the way it is anymore. And people just, you know, it's.
But what else can the NFL do, though, Jason? I mean, how? I mean, they have addressed it. They have addressed, you know, hanging out with the wrong people. I mean, what else can you do? At some point, it becomes personal responsibility and being accountable.
Absolutely, because teams can't follow guys home. You know, you can't spend every minute of the day. I mean, I had my own experience. I got the DUI my second year down in Carolina. It was my first off season, and you know, I wasn't hammered or anything, but I had one drink too many. And you know, it's all it takes is one drink too many. You think you're fine. You know, I didn't get behind the wheel thinking, oh, I want to, you know, pull one over on the law here. It was just, you know, one of those things where you have a few, you think you're still making good decisions, and you think to yourself, I'm fine. Even if I got pulled over, I'm still fine. And it's just easier for me to get in my car and drive home than it is to call a taxi and have them take me home, or call a friend, have them drive me home, then I'll come back tomorrow and I'll pick up my car. You know, the day after, certainly, it sounds like a great plan, but the night of, you know, you think that the best plan is you driving home, and certainly it's not, but yeah.
How did the Carolina Panthers handle that, Jason?
Oh, well, Jerry Richardson, the owner, he had his secretary call me and said that I needed to meet him at a restaurant, the Palm, which was kind of his place.
It's a great restaurant.
At a specific time, yeah. At least it was a nice meal.
Yeah.
But I came in, and I was nervous as could be. You know, because I had... It wasn't the best rookie year. You know, playing-wise, it was all right. But, you know, halfway through the year, right when I... You know, I had missed training camp with a contract holdout. And I think people from within that organization never held that against me because they knew that it wasn't my fault, so to speak. You know, in order for them to free up that cap space, in order to sign me, they were going to have to cut a bunch of you know, veterans to make that money available, and they just couldn't do that in the beginning of the year, at the beginning of training camp. Otherwise, you know, they would have been short on guys, you know, whatever. Sometimes, you know, it's not just the player that is asking for more money. I just kind of wanted a fair deal. So, but the perception down there from Carolina fans wasn't great. You know, you kind of get pinned as the spoiled athlete who just wants more and more money than you actually have earned or deserved. You know, and it's funny, being in the first round, everything's pretty much slotted anyway in terms of contract. But anyway, getting off topic here, so I had the contract dispute, and then about, I think it was the eighth game of the season, right when I had finally started to feel comfortable in a new defense, things were going really well, was playing well, and we were midweek and getting ready for, I forget which game, but we were 0-8 at the time, and there were a lot of grumpy guys around that stadium. And we were out of practice. It was like one of the first days back after another loss, and there was a new guy that they had kind of just brought in from the offensive line, and he came off the ball a million miles an hour. We were in no pad. I thought he came off the ball too hard, so I punched him in the head, and I broke my hand.
Oh, Jason.
Yeah, so, you know, it wasn't a great year. Then I had said some stuff in terms of the defense, you know, in the media about, you know, I'm not really built for a 3-4. You know, they should have drafted somebody else. I'm a kind of an up-the-field guy. You know, stuff that I shouldn't have said, but young guys sometimes say things that they shouldn't. And so it wasn't a great first year, but anyway, he brings me into the restaurant, and he asked me, and then, you know, the DUI, but he asked me, he says, Jason, he goes, tell me right now. He goes, if you don't want to be here, he goes, I'll get on the phone, and I'll trade you. And he said, just tell me. He goes, and you don't have to tell me to, you know, make me happy. He goes, I just want to know. If you want to be here, then you could be here. But if not, let me know, and I will trade you. And I said, absolutely, I want to be here. And he said, all right, sit down. And, you know, you kind of get into the NFL drug and alcohol, the substance abuse program, that now you're getting tested 6-7 times a month. And, you know, so that becomes kind of something that guys have to deal with when you get arrested. But at that point, you know, that was pretty much it in terms of how the team dealt with it. You know, I think there's some counseling you have to go to. But overall, you know, the fines don't really start coming in until you have had another incident or a failed drug test or something like that.
Just a few more minutes this weekend on the Big E Sports Show with Jason Peter as we wrap up our Under the Helmet segment. We've been talking about the NFL, some of the happenings that have been going on in the NFL. But right now, you know, it was just released this past week with Sports Illustrated, the 10 best and 5 worst coaches in college football. And Jason, I know you've had a chance to kind of look over the list. Would you agree? Was there anything that you did not agree when you saw that?
Well, I'm not going to say I'm a Lane Kiffin fan, so I'm all right with Lane Kiffin being on that list.
The 5 worst coaches?
The 5 worst.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, really, I don't know what else needs to be said about Lane Kiffin. He hasn't really done anything, but he just keeps kind of moving up the coaching ladder. I don't know if it's all because who his daddy is, but maybe it's just the last name. I don't know. His brother was just named, I think, Recruiter of the Year down at Old Miss for pulling in about 3 5-star kids to a program that's usually been at the bottom. But with the 5 worst coaches, you have Tim Beckman, Ron English, Kirk Ferentz, who, you know, given the proximity to Nebraska, he's somebody that comes up in conversation a lot. And I just don't get it. That's the easiest way, the best way to put it, with Kirk Ferentz. And I think it's something that a lot of people say. I just don't get it. Why does Iowa continue to pay this guy almost $4 million a year?
I know, and you've talked about that before in our program.
Yeah, I mean, for what? They've had one season in 2009 where they went to the Orange Bowl, I believe. But what else? I mean, I just don't understand where they can justify paying him that type of money. I mean, he's got one heck of an agent, I'll tell you that, because every time a pro job comes available, his name is always being floated around. So he was another one, Charlie Weiss, who, gosh, I mean, you go turn the clock back 4, 5, 6 years. I mean, coming out of New England, this guy was as hot as they come, and really just, you know, failed at Notre Dame and Kansas as well, too.
I was going to say, as we look at the top 10, Nick Saban right there, you know, Urban Meyer. You think Chris Peterson over Gary Patterson?
I think you could flip a coin there. I think, you know, they've both been just killer coaches. You know, what can you say about what they've done? I mean, they both have taken programs that weren't looked at as big, major programs, and he's put them out on the porch, you know, and they're hanging out there. I mean, they're just, you know, sticking around with the big boys. And now, obviously, for Gary Patterson, it's the job, I think, is a little bit easier being in the Big 12. You know, Chris Peterson doesn't really have that luxury of saying, you know, we're a Big 12 or a Big 10. I don't even know, where is Boise State now? A Big East? Or have they moved conferences once again? It seems like they were headed out there, and I couldn't even tell you exactly. Maybe it's still my brain's on Hawaii time. But Chris Peterson, every year his name comes up, as well as Gary Patterson. But I think people look at Chris Peterson and they think, because he doesn't have that kind of luxury, what I just said with Gary Patterson of the major conference, that I think people think he's more liable maybe to jump ship at Boise, and that maybe he would be an easier get than a Gary Patterson. But it seems that Chris Peterson is happy out in Boise State. I think there was maybe some family stuff that had went on with one of his kids being sick. And, you know, Boise was kind of there through all of it. And I think he feels like, you know, that's their home. And I don't know if he'll ever leave, but you know, you can never say never. But I think both of them certainly deserve to be in the top 5 with what they've done. It's difficult, I think, when you have to play a tough big time schedule week after week. So for me, I generally would probably gravitate more towards Gary Peterson and now him in the Big 12 and having success there. With being at Boise, you know, you prep for a tough non-conference game early in the year, and then you kind of beat up on the rest of your schedule, and then you get a good bowl game. It's easier to keep guys healthy if you're playing that sort of schedule. But when you have to play the grind of a big-time schedule, the job, I think, becomes much more difficult because you don't have all 22 starters, from game one to game 13. Chances are you're going to have to use that depth. In fact, I know, not chances are, you're going to have to use some depth. You can't just run with starters, for an entire season. You've got to go too deep. Sometimes you got to go three deep, four deep, and you better have that quality there. But, you're seeing, and that's no knock on Boise and Chris Peterson, because the proof is in the pudding, and you're seeing Boise State guys go off those draft boards early the last few years. They're putting out talent. It's not just a bunch of hacks out there, so I don't want to give that impression. He's got good football players, and every time he knocks off a big guy, he's more likely to get another talented football player, and that's what he continues to do.
Well, Jason, whether it's Urban Meyer, Chris Peter, Gary Patterson, the one thing about all of those coaches, Nick Saban, is that they're strong leaders and their ability to show just a great level of consistency within the program. And we didn't even get time to talk about Bob Stoops at Oklahoma. So we're out of time. We look forward to catching up with you next week. And welcome back from vacation, and we'll have a lot more ground to cover in the weeks to come because college football season will be here shortly.
Right around the corner.
You got it. Thanks so much. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.